On Community Conversation, we're going to be talking about the next upcoming concert with the Adrian Symphony Orchestra. So happy to have on the program to talk about that, and it's going to be another special one coming up, is the Executive Director of the Adrian Symphony Orchestra, Libby Watson. Hi, Libby.
Hi, good evening, Dale.
It's good to have you back with us again, and also back to talk about the upcoming concert as well, the ASO Conductor and Music Director, Bruce Kiesling. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, great to be with you, Dale.
This is going to be another super concert that's going to be coming up. The other ones weren't super, but this is going to be a super concert.
Yeah, a great bookend to the season. This is the final classical concert of our 25-26 season, and we've titled it Celebrate America. And this is a part of our efforts to celebrate America's 250.
Uh-huh.
It's happening Friday, May 1st at 7:30 p.m. at Dawson Auditorium on the Adrian College campus. The box office will open an hour ahead of time. Tickets are available now online at adriansymphony.org or by phone at 517-264-3121. We have a pre-concert talk by the music director that will begin in the hall at 6:40. So come a little early for that. Enjoy hearing the stories behind the scenes from Bruce, the music director and conductor. And then again, the concert begins at 7:30. Again, it's Friday, May 1st.
Okay, very good. Celebrate America. So what type of music are we going to be talking about here, Bruce?
Mostly European classics, Dan. surprisingly, we will be celebrating all this wonderful music of America for sure. And we're looking ahead about 2 months because the concert are coming up on May 1st. But if you jump forward, let's say 2 months into a couple of days, we'll be at July 4th. And of course, this is not just any July 4th, but a very special anniversary with 250 years since July 4th, 1776. And we thought, what better time to celebrate some of this great music of America. And so what we have here is a concert that kind of has a little bit of everything on there. So we'll see a little bit of new music, a little bit of older music, classic sort of summer fare and music of John Philip Sousa, a fantastic Gershwin piece, and some experimental music, but not too way out there.
Okay.
I think there's part of the American history is our ingenuity. And so there's two pieces which kind of explore that a little bit. Some musicians, American composers who helped push things forward in terms of their musical composition. But the whole thing kicks off with music of Aaron Copland. And you might remember that a couple of years ago, we did a whole season tribute.
Yes.
Where we did one piece by Aaron Copland on all of our classical concerts. And people really enjoyed that. But I did get a few requests. They said, you went this whole season and you didn't do my favorite piece. They would say, their favorite piece,
sure,
which was the Fanfare for the Common Man. And this is one of those pieces, if you don't know it by name, if you were to hear the trumpet call that opens it, we go, oh, that piece.
It's
a really short work. It's only about 3 minutes, only for the brass section of the orchestra and the percussion. And so I just said, don't worry, just wait. we couldn't do all the pieces in 1 year.
Right.
So we saved this up, and we're glad to open this concert with that fanfare to kick things off. And again, it's very sort of rousing and patriotic and reverential all at the same time, and really shows off the fantastic brass players of the Adrian Symphony here.
So along with that, you'll be having others that will be coming up with that same kind of a theme too, right, Bruce?
Exactly. And Charles Ives, he's the next composer that we're going to be doing music of. And he's one of those experimental guys. But I say that with a grain of salt because, again, this was experimental back about 100 years ago, in 1920 or so. And Charles Ives is an interesting character in history because he was primarily an organist and mostly an amateur organist.
Oh.
And so you might not know that, when you leave church and the organist is up there playing some of that rousing kind of music just to kind of get people out of the room, say hello to the priest and go home and have your lunch, etc. Sometimes the organist will improvise that, and it was expected to be a skill that most organists would have during the service music, maybe during communion, etc. The organist would kind of improvise things that were in the style of, oh, this is a quiet moment, reverential.
Mm-hmm.
This is like just sort of underscoring music while candles were lit, whatever the
right
ceremonial things were. So improvisation was a commonly expected skill of an organist in that era, and some still today, depending on how high or low your church service might be. So Ives was a gifted improviser, and one of the things that he would often do is improvise on various themes. And so here he has an organ piece that he published, which was a written down version, of one of his improvisations on the America. You know, my country, tis of thee, da, da, da.
Okay,
da,
sure.
Yeah. Right? And so he does this, and it's been orchestrated now for the full orchestra. So we hear this tune over and over that we recognize. Yon, da, 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 mm-hmm. da, but over and over again, first one, slow, then fast, then with brass, then with strings, then with winds, then with the percussionists, then exciting, and we hear it in all these different ways. And so it's very charming because we recognize it. It's not terribly long, but you get to hear this tune that you recognize, really played by a professional orchestra in all sorts of color. And the famous thing about this is he was, we think, the first American composer to write in two keys at once.
So no kidding. Wow.
Some of the orchestra's in one key and the other part of the orchestra's in another, and you're hearing them at the same time. So this was considered quite revolutionary for its time. And as an organist, he would do this. And so you could kind of hear things that he could put them in some of the pipes on this side of the room in one key, and then from coming from antiphonally, maybe in the back or something of the church, you'd hear it in a different key all at the same time.
Huh.
Now, musicians love this kind of stuff. So you'll have to forgive them, but I think ultimately you'll think, oh well, I can recognize both those tunes. You know, nowadays to our ears, you know, to who are used to hearing all kinds of dissonance and modern sounds, it doesn't sound nearly as unusual as it must have back then.
Sure,
but we can kind of put ourselves in that mindset and certainly enjoy what's quite a rousing and exciting piece of this tune that we know in Charles Ives. I always like to bring up the story. You know, Charles Ives was a composer of modest success, but he was tremendously successful in the insurance field, where he was a real pioneer in actuary tables
and made
absolutely a fortune.
Huh?
And I have run into people in the insurance industry who say, hey, have you ever heard of this guy Charles Ives, who's really well known in insurance, but I hear he's a composer too. And we always say, well, Charles Ives is a composer who also did a little on the insurance side.
Yeah.
But he was very, very successful and was able to kind of bankroll and publish all of his music by himself. He just self-published because he made so much money in insurance that he could it didn't matter whether he sold enough to, of his music. But his music was played by some of the greatest orchestras, and he wrote four symphonies, some of which were very, very modern in their attempt. And, you know, he took like Turkey in the Straw and arranged it to be done by two different orchestras at the same time and played sort of he was quite an experimental.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So, really unusual stuff.
Yeah.
So that'll be a lot of fun. Again, it's a short work, a couple of dissonant spots, but really quite rousing and exciting overall. In that same vein of sort of American ingenuity and moving things forward, we now move to the music of Howard Hanson, and we're doing his Symphony No. 6. And I know that a lot of people, when they see symphony, they think, oh, this is going to be this big sort of grand, long work. This is actually one of Hanson's short works. It has six movements, but they're all very, very short. I was describing this piece to a friend the other day, and I said, you know how long you think a movement, you wish a movement was?
Yeah.
I was like, that's how long these movements are. You're like, oh, it's very nice. It was like 6 minutes. That's great.
Yeah.
So some of them are very short, about 2 or 3 minutes, some about 5 minutes. But it gives you just enough taste of each one. And I think another composer would have sort of combined those. So they wouldn't have called it six separate movements. They would have said, oh, this movement has a slow part and a fast part.
Yeah,
but he kind of separates those.
Okay.
But in this very sort of exciting and colorful music, at the same time with a modern edge. So you can definitely tell that this is contemporary music. And so I think owes a lot of to film music, so it kind of has this kind of military and martial sound, that raising fifth that we know so well from Indiana Jones, from Star Wars, or E.T., all of that. That's the whole piece is built around the perfect fifth, which is that particular interval, which we all recognize. Superman uses that too. That's a perfect fifth. So lots of John Williams music uses that. And Hanson uses the perfect fifth throughout this. So you'll hear that all over the place. And he's a very gifted orchestrator. And none of the music is terribly slow, so there's not kind of, there's no boring part, don't worry, you'll love this. But again, you get to hear kind of modern sounds, because he's kind of pushing the limits of what, it doesn't sound like Beethoven at all. It sounds like contemporary orchestral music, but it's also very accessible and likable right away. And I wanted to include sort of some slightly long-haired music that's like, oh, these are the serious musicians from 1950s, 60s, and 70s who were writing attractive, not really off the deep end music, but writing music in America at that time.
Okay. Well, then we go back, or I shouldn't say go back, but we're going to Gershwin.
Exactly. That is a little bit of a throwback because Gershwin's music comes from primarily the 1920s and 30s, which is where most of his great works were written. He was, of course, writing in New York initially, and then was one of the first composers to go out to Hollywood and work out there a lot. So many of the songs that we know and love by Gershwin and his brother Ira, they were written for films as opposed to a few Broadway shows that he did in the early 20s. But then he started writing concert works and a lot of songs for Hollywood. So we're going to play his concerto in F. Now, a couple of years ago, we did the Rhapsody in Blue, which is the really famous piano work that he did. And that really put him on the map as a composer. He was certainly well-known in Tin Pan Alley and writer of pop, sort of short pop songs, likable things, and a few Broadway shows. You know, he wrote Girl Crazy, which has I Got Rhythm, and which was a big vehicle for Ethel Merman.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone knows that that was one of the first things she ever sang on Broadway. And there's a great clip of her saying the first song that really put me on the map was I Got Rhythm.
Wow.
And so she was in that show originally, and that was in the early 20s. And then he began writing, he wanted to write some classical music. And there's a great story about the commissioning of Rhapsody in Blue, because he had been asked to write it. He said no, but Paul Whiteman, the band leader, went ahead and announced it anyway. And his brother saw it in the paper and was like, hey, are you writing a concerto for Paul Whiteman? He said, no, I told him no twice. You know, and he said, well, it's in the paper that you're doing it in like 2 weeks or 2 months. It was 2 months.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Gershwin called him up and said, hey, I told you no for this. And he said, yeah, I know, but my rival was about to announce a concert and I wanted to make sure that I announced mine first, and I knew that if I mentioned your name, the New York Times would print it. So that's how that all happened. So he said, all right, I can write something.
Oh my gosh. He wrote
Rhapsody in Blue in record time, just on the train back and forth to New York and New Haven at that time. And so because of that, though, at that premiere, everybody in New York who was an important musician, from Stravinsky to Walter Damrosch, the conductor of the New York Phil, like everybody who was anybody was there. And it was a four-hour concert.
Oh, my gosh.
February in New York, the heat had gone out.
Oh, geez.
So everyone was just like, oh my gosh, this concert will never end. We're all freezing. Yeah. It's like 4 hours long. And the last piece was Rhapsody in Blue. And suddenly everyone sat up like, wait, what is this? This is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's because of that, literally that night, he went backstage and said, I want to commission a real concerto from you. And the result was the concerto in F. So here we have a very traditional concerto, three movements, fast movement, a beautiful slow and bluesy middle movement, and then just a rhythmic, like run to the end finale. And a great, great work. Audiences always love this piece. It's a real showpiece for the orchestra, a showpiece for the pianist. We have a great guest artist in Albert Cano Smith, who's going to come and just play the pants off that piano. I know it's going to be wonderful. And I love the piece. We've done it here, but it's been many years now since I've done it. I think 7 or 8 years since we've done it here. But it's one of those pieces you just, it sounds and smells like America in the best sense. Like all the energy and excitement of New York in the 1920s, all that optimism and potential. And it's really captured in that. And I just, nothing sounds more American than the music of Gershwin, I always say.
Yeah.
And that's why it's used still today in movies about New York, you know.
Oh, sure.
That it's, you know, all those Woody Allen movies that he plays Gershwin in Manhattan and other films.
Right.
Because it just evokes that American sound.
Yeah.
And of course, we'll have some music of John Philip Sousa on there, because what's more summertime and Americana than Sousa and his Stars and Stripes Forever, Washington Post March, a whole list of other things, and maybe something special that people come, that maybe unannounced, we'll see.
Ooh.
If they come. I like a little surprise here and there.
I know you do.
We always have things to celebrate, not just America, but for the Adrian Symphony too. So.
Yeah.
Maybe something unexpected. But we really have a great orchestral finale for our season this year, and we are excited to talk about it.
Absolutely. And you had some very special help on this one too, right, Libby?
Yeah. Thank you, Dale. We want to thank our sponsors, as always, the Stubnitz Foundation, for underwriting the guest artist fund that brings Albert Cano Smith to Adrian. And we thank our season title sponsor, Planewave, and Observable Space. And we have support also from the Lenawee Community Foundation and the Michigan Arts and Cultural Affairs. But also special for this concert is direct funding that is being provided through the National Endowment for the Arts,
wow.
The NEA. Yeah, and it's a huge honor for us to receive direct funding from the NEA. And it's a very competitive process. It's a huge application that we turn in a year in advance.
Sure.
And panelists that are knowledgeable about our art form, review those. We're up against orchestras and arts organizations all over the country, and just a few are selected for this special honor. So we're just thrilled to have that seal of approval, as a part of this concert that's going to help us make this absolutely spectacular for our audience.
And congratulations for receiving that too, Libby. That's pretty awesome. As you're competing with other symphonies across the country to be able to receive that grant, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and it speaks to the high quality of art you can always expect to see at Dawson Auditorium with the Adrian Symphony Orchestra.
That's right.
And it speaks to the community impact that we have in Lenawee County. So we're just really proud of it, and we just hope everybody will make time to come out and enjoy this concert with us. Again, it's happening May 1st. That's a Friday. It's called Celebrate America. The concert begins at 7:30, but come early and enjoy a little behind-the-scenes look with Bruce Kiesling, who will start his talk at 6:40 in the hall. Tickets are available online at adriansymphony.org or by phone at 517-264-3121. And of course, we'll have the box office open that evening. It opens at 6:30, just before that talk begins. But get your tickets now.
Yes, exactly.
You're going to want to be there. So just go ahead and get those secured.
Great minds work together. I was thinking the exact same thing, Libby. So yeah, get your tickets now, and don't procrastinate on this one, because I think this is going to be one that's going to be well attended on this one too. And especially if you've just heard what Bruce was talking about, that should give an even more of a incentive to be able to get your tickets early. So congratulations on a wonderful program that you got set up, Bruce, and thank you so much for being here once again.
Thanks for having us. Always a pleasure, Dale.
And Libby Watson, always thank you, too.
Thanks, Dale. Have a great evening.
You, too. This has been Community Conversation. I'm Dale Gartner, and we'll talk again soon.